A leaked government report warns of fresh food, fuel, and medicine shortages in Britain. Live from London, this is the Marketplace Morning Report from the BBC World Service. I'm Victoria Craig. Good morning. The leaked document, dubbed Operation Yellowhammer, highlights risks of disruptions after a no-deal Brexit. Michael Gove, the government minister in charge of no-deal planning, acknowledged there would be, quote, bumps in the road, but said preparations had accelerated since Boris Johnson became prime minister 4 weeks ago. Mr. Johnson will meet with European leaders this week to discuss the UK's departure. But with 73 days to go, Janice Henderson fund manager Laura Full says businesses are suffering from Brexit preparation fatigue.
This is the third time that we've been, in theory, leaving the EU. And actually, the end of October is not a great time for businesses to be stockpiling anyway, because they're already having to hold a lot of stock for the Christmas season.
The Prime Minister continues to promise leaving, deal or no deal, but there are economic ramifications of that, aren't there? The Bank of England has warned of an instantaneous shock in a no-deal departure. We've seen the pound tumble this summer, the economy contract in the second quarter for the first time in 7 years. What are you looking at longer term as the impact of Brexit?
I think it will almost certainly have a negative impact on the UK economy if there is a hard Brexit. I think the question mark is, to what degree is that economic shock, and also to what degree is the policy response in terms of both monetary and fiscal policy. Our fiscal situation here is relatively modest. There could be more government spending, and I think we would likely see the Bank of England cut interest rates in that scenario.
So clearly there's worry about the impact on various things, from getting fresh food to supplies for medicines, ports and shipping. But one sector that seems to be fairly ready for Brexit is financial services.
I think financial services have come a long way in terms of their preparation, moving what needs to be moved. What we don't know is how far EU regulation could diverge from UK regulation and the problems that that would bring. The preparation, I think, has been done to the degree that it can be, but there are just these unknown unknowns effectively that could come in future years.
Laura Full there. Let's do the numbers. Global shares are broadly higher, with all eyes on the Fed's annual gathering of global central bankers in Jackson Hole, Wyoming this week. Stocks in Asia rallied after China's central bank said it would change the way it sets a key interest rate to reduce corporate borrowing costs and support the economy. Iran has warned of grave consequences if the U.S. again attempts to seize an Iranian oil tanker, which left Gibraltar overnight, marking the end of a 6-week row between London and Tehran. The BBC's James Robbins reports.
The Gibraltar courts made clear last Thursday that the Iranian tanker was free to go on its way after written Iranian government assurances that its cargo was not being shipped to Syria. That prompted the United States to make a last-ditch legal effort to have the tanker seized on different grounds. That the ship and its cargo of oil was controlled by Iran's Revolutionary Guard Corps. But the government of Gibraltar, a British overseas territory, has now roundly rejected the American case, saying that the Corps is not a designated foreign terrorist organisation in Gibraltar, the UK, or in the EU generally, unlike in the United States. More than that, Gibraltar says the American sanctions preventing oil exports from Iran cannot be enforced by the European Union. All this illustrates vividly the transatlantic tensions over policy towards Iran, even if both Europe and the United States would like to see changes in Iranian behavior.
James Robbins there. Music fans over the weekend celebrated 50 years since Woodstock. While a lot of things have changed about the musical festival experience since 1969, maybe the toilets haven't. The BBC's Vivian Nunes, though, reports on some innovation in that field.
During the Wilderness Festival in Oxfordshire in southern England, music fans were quick to line up, not for access to the hottest acts on stage, but for passes to luxury toilets. A 4-day pass to Lou Watt's upscale porta potties was close to $50 on top of the $200 festival ticket. That might sound like a lot, but female access passes sold out. I ventured into one cubicle to find out what all the fuss was about and see how it works.
There's what looks like a plastic bag under the seat. Lou Watt uses no water and no chemicals. So let me see what happens if I flush. So as long as I hold the flush button down, the plastic moves downward. Fresh plastic is put there.
After the festival, the waste collected in the Lou Watt toilets is transported to a treatment works in London, where it's converted into energy. Virginia Gardner is the founder and CEO of Lou Watt.
Organics are converted into power, which is then fed to combined heat and power generators. It enables what you could say are the most state-of-the-art types of systems to work.
Virginia says her primary aim isn't to provide toilets to music festivals here in Britain, but to find a sanitation solution that can be used in urban centres where sewage systems don't exist.
The water flush toilet's a great invention because it's hygienic, but unfortunately it's not designed for the 21st century. And so there's a need for toilets that provide that same experience, but that work in modern cities.
The Lou Watt toilets are sold for $200 each. The company says that price will come down as production volumes are increased, but they do require emptying, something that's being tested in Madagascar and the Philippines.
Our toilets are designed to be serviced once per week in a family home. Everything's packaged and contained, and then you can take it to your waste processing facility, feed it into one of our machines, and you get all your organics pumped in to where they need to go.
Providing adequate and equitable sanitation by 2030 is one of the UN's major sustainable development goals. Martin Gambrill is part of that effort. He's lead for water and sanitation at the World Bank.
2.3 billion people worldwide lack access to what we call basic sanitation. So the global economic cost of inadequate sanitation totaling $260 billion a year, and the impact on worker productivity, on health, on tourism revenue that's lost.
While the music festival circuit is a profitable one for Lou Watt, CEO Virginia Gardner is focused on addressing the global toilet shortage. She's expanding the service to densely populated urban cities in Madagascar and the Philippines. In London, I'm the BBC's Vivienne Nunes for Marketplace.
Let us know if you've spotted any of those new toilets. In London, I'm Victoria Craig with the Marketplace Morning Report from the BBC World Service.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.